interrupt your regularly scheduled podcast for a Bayonetta 2 celebration. Get ready for a Hair Witch action boogaloo!
Actually, welcome to Game Buoy. But holy shit, how amazing is it that Bayonetta 2 is actually a real thing that we're going to get to play?
Right?
In any event, I'm Captain Spike. With me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Ahoy, mateys!
And we are, as always, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and opinions that are not on your radar, but probably should be. And that wub, man, that was well done.
Yo-ho, in a bottle of wub.
Are you serious? That's awesome.
Thanks, but I stole that from a YouTube comment.
Early bitch. Anyway, you know, this week we're going to be talking about some really weird and unexpected stuff.
Yeah, really weird. Really weird.
Yeah, weird, even with an H, I guess. Like, Bayonetta 2 actually exists. I don't know what world this is, but everything's perfect and nothing hurts.
It's the world in which pirates rule. That's what world we live in.
Anyway, it's awesome that we have all this weird and unexpected stuff to discuss, but we actually kind of don't have a discussion topic as a result. So, don't worry, you know, we're going to be prattling along like we always do, impassioned about left of the center gaming, just a little less focused perhaps than usual. So, first, we have an administrative point. We went longer than ever last week in our spectacular Final Fantasy episode. And this week we're going to try to keep things a little leaner, a little meaner. But mainly what I want from you folks out there in Radioland is maybe you could just touch base with us. What is your preferred length of a podcast episode? I know that my own ideal is, you know, 45 minutes to an hour or so, and I think I've waxed lyrical on that before, but, you know, I stick around to my favorite podcasts regardless of how long they go. Is that true for you guys, or are we doing you a serious disservice in doing these giant blowouts? In any event, tweet us, email us, Facebook us, call me, beat me if you want to reach me, I don't know. In any event, moving on, we have a quick follow-up topic. Slag, if you want to take this one for me.
Yeah, we were talking about the Neo Geo X handheld device a couple episodes back. And, you know, some people were still complaining about the price point, even though I didn't think it was that ridiculous. But anyway, they've decided to put out just a handheld package without any of those extra accessories. And that's only going to cost you $130. So for those who you know, just want the games and, you know, the portability of it, then there you go. But, you know, I think the whole package is pretty cool, but it's nice that they have different options, so.
You know, yeah, that's cool. I think it's really cool that they did this. It's certainly not the package that I want. I'm very excited
to have. Oh, and what type of package do you want, Captain Spike?
Girl.
You want the big package, don't you?
Okay, strictly speaking, that's true.
But also in the case of the Neo Geo X, you would want the
That is
package.
What I was... I hate you. You're awful.
Also, big penis.
Stop it! We want people to be able to listen to this at work. Okay, well, maybe not this episode, but future episodes. You know, as I said, I'm going to buy the big box. I think that having the docking station that looks like an old AES console, I think that's super cool. I think that having the joystick with the cool joystick and the cool arcade buttons, I think that's awesome. I'm definitely buying a Neo Geo X, and I'm definitely buying the one that has the docking station and controller. But, you know, as we talked about previously here on the show, a lot of people have a problem with the price tag attached to that package, and I think it's great that they're offering options. I think that this whole two SKU thing can work out really well for companies that utilize it properly. Which we'll obviously talk about a little more later on.
Obviously, Sony is not part of that.
Well, no, because I don't think they leverage two SKUs. I think that they leverage
like 14.
Like 14. It's ridiculous.
It really is. So, yeah, not much else to follow up on, so I believe it's time for our Oh my god, news. So, Captain Spike, what's on our news platter for today?
So, Square Enix announced, and then the same day, released a new iOS JRPG. This one is called Drake Rider, and it actually has, it's a really pretty game. It looks almost like a PS2 JRPG, and it has some really cool... it has a really cool setting. There's, dragons flying around, as you'd expect from the name Drake Rider. When Drake Rider was first trademarked or copyrighted for use in the U.S., a lot of people thought this was going to be a Drakengard sequel. But instead, it's a pretty cool JRPG. I've only played the first free chapter so far, but I was really impressed by the production values. It was kind of like playing a console RPG on my phone. The first chapter is free, each subsequent chapter is $7 or $8. And there's a discount if you buy the whole game, you get it for $21 if you buy it in one lump.
I still think it's overpriced for an iOS game. This should only cost 99 cents.
You know, I've seen a lot of that on the internet about this game in particular, and...
We were talking about Final Fantasy Dimensions, the whole price QQ about that, so I mean... I don't know, but this game really does look cool. I'm going to definitely get the free first chapter or, the little prologue or whatever.
Yeah.
Because it looks cool. It looks very much like a PS2.
I wasn't able to draw, a solid bead on how I felt about the battle system. It's kind of why I don't have as much to say about it as I had hoped. But I enjoyed the setting. I enjoyed the production values. It was pretty, and it had some good music. So, ultimately, I was very happy with it. I'm definitely going to buy the later chapters when I have some time to sit down with my phone for some iOS gaming.
Right, and I was reading up on it, and it's developed by a company called Witchcraft. Are you familiar with them, or are they kind of just a little boutique studio, or...
I have to admit, I'm not terribly familiar with Witchcraft.
But, I mean, it looks very... JRPG-ish, for lack of a better word, so, definitely, we're all about the JRPGs on here, so, worth a try. The first, if you have an iOS device, the first chapter's free, so, it can't hurt, to give it a try, so I think it's cool that they let you do the, first part of the game for free.
And, I really have to say, I think that we're seeing, we're really seeing Square Enix... embrace this philosophy for their mobile games, and I'm wondering if that isn't in part a response to the Ouya craze. Those of you out there who have been paying attention to the Ouya will know that every game on Ouya is going to require a free component be present, and for the Square Enix RPGs that they've committed for the platform, in particular Final Fantasy III, you actually end up getting the game split into chapters, with the first chapter being free. And I can't help but wonder if this isn't... if they didn't realize that there's a demand for this kind of free content, and now they're leveraging, the rest of the game into almost a microtransaction purchase rather than paying it all up front. And I think it's kind of interesting to look at it that way, because they definitely didn't used to sell their games this way. I wonder if their games are more popular now that people can get a taste before clunking down the, how do I say this without appearing to have a side, larger than standard. The prices for these Square Enix games are definitely larger than standard, and I wonder if this is helping them sort of deal with that.
Yeah, and I mean, you bring up a good point with the Ouya. Square Enix has said that they're definitely going to be big supporters of the console, so, that really is an interesting way to think about it, and, why not apply it to all their mobile or, non-traditional console-based gaming? The other thing that I think is interesting is that we're seeing a lot of Square Enix stuff on iOS these days, which is pretty cool, because, I always used to hear about the, Final Fantasy... Was it Before Crisis? Was that the mobile game?
Yeah, Before Crisis.
The one, we were talking about that last time with the Turks, and I was, you know, always upset because I'm like, well, it's only going to come out in Japan, and the Turks are like the probably the coolest part of Final Fantasy VII. So it just kind of seemed like, oh, mobile gaming, that's kind of a niche thing, but you know, now they really seem to be kind of embracing that, so that's cool. We always like to see more from Square Enix. At least I do.
Yeah, me too. I'm a big fan. Probably you could tell by the way that I talked for like 2 hours last week about Final Fantasy. I'm a huge fan of Square Enix. I was a big fan of Squaresoft. I was a big fan of Enix. Them combining, I think that they have both taken on a lot of really positive qualities of the other.
Yeah, of all the mergers that have happened in the past, 15, 20 years, probably the most fruitful, for sure.
Well, there are those who disagree, and I think it's fair. I think that there is some criticism to be lobbed, but
meh.
But for my tastes and, you know, where I'm at, I think it worked out pretty well.
For what it's worth, Square Enix basically sells Sony consoles and stuff to me, so.
Well, at least someone's getting you to buy them the way you have attitude about them.
Right?
Anyway, we need to move on. We're really trying to keep things fast this week. Another interesting thing that happened, Capcom has announced a set of mobile phone games, kind of tying into what we were just talking about. Now, there's a couple of interesting bullet points here that I want to go over before I really list what they all are. And that is that one of these games is a Capcom All-Stars game, which has Asura from Asura's Wrath in the art for it, which leads me to believe that maybe Asura's Wrath was not the bomba that we all expected it to be. There was also a Ruby Heart game, which those of you out there who have been gaming for a while will recognize Ruby Heart as being one of the two characters that was made originally for Marvel vs. Capcom 2. There was also a Monster Hunter game. And at the time that I had written this this guide for this episode, that was the only Monster Hunter game that we were confirmed to be getting for the U.S. That is no longer the case, but we'll discuss that a little later. So, these games, as listed, and I'm pulling this window up, Slagkick, if you could read off this list for me.
The first one is, as you were mentioning, the All-Stars. It's called Minato Capcom All-Stars. I'm totally going to get some hate mail someday from someone in Japan.
I was going to stop you, but you can keep doing
this. And that's,
this.
It's got characters from Street Fighter, Resident Evil, Monster Hunter, Ace Attorney, Asura's, what is it, Asura's?
Asura's Wrath.
Asura's Wrath. And so, kind of just a big hodgepodge of Capcom realness.
Yeah, and I see old Dante on here, like not DMC Dante, but proper Devil May Cry Dante.
I can't help but wonder, you know how that happened with Prince of Persia? How they tried the new prince, and then they're like, no.
Well,
I kind of wonder if that's going to happen with DMC.
I thought it was going to happen that way, but, the Ninja Theory, the studio that's making that DMC game that I think is an abomination.
May be good, but you have to be drunk to enjoy it.
I don't know about all that.
Well, if you're writing for Kotaku.
Oh, I got the reference. I was just trying to be classy. Not that you would know anything about that.
I'm flipping Captain Spike the Bird. You can't see that because this is a podcast, doing it.
I deserve it. I have no right calling someone else out as classless. But no, Ninja Theory has confirmed that they're working on a sequel already. A DMC 2.
They must have a lot of faith in...
That's awful. I'm really disappointed by that.
Anyway, the next one is Minato Hukago Soul Hunters. And it's a Soul Hunter... game. Is that part of a series? I'm not too familiar with it.
I'm not. If this is a license, I'm not familiar with it.
So it's a kind of like, it looks like a card-based battle game from what we can tell.
Interesting.
And there is Minato Daikokai Frontier.
And this is the Ruby Heart game.
And it looks pretty cool.
There's some badass pirates on the cover.
Badass pirates, so obviously we're down for that. And then the ones we're getting in the West, Resident Evil versus, of course, in Japan, Biohazard versus, Dead Rising, The Survival, and Monster Hunter, Massive Hunting.
Yeah. And, it's cool that they've already confirmed that they're going to be releasing Monster Hunter Massive Hunting in the U.S. I'm not super into Monster Hunter. I like the games a lot. I've put definitely like 40, 50 hours into that series. But a lot of these hardcore Monster Hunter players max out their game clocks on every release at 999 hours, 99 minutes, etc.
That shit cray.
Like, those people love those games. And I feel like Capcom treats them even worse than Capcom treats Mega Man fans.
And I've got to point out that these releases are for GREE, G-R-E-E, and I'm going to admit I don't really know what that is. So, Captain Spike, can you...
Yeah, so GREE is sort of like... I think maybe the American analog would almost be like Zynga. It's like a Japanese mobile phone, like, free-to-play company that sort of just corrals, you know, these free-to-play titles that they can do microtransactions with and sort of helps companies leverage their properties into that marketplace.
Yeah, I mean, from what I've seen, you know, there's a Metal Gear Solid title coming to it. There's a Persona 4 card battle game. And a Square Enix card battle game. And, you know, even, like, Level 5 is supporting them. So, I mean, actually, unlike Zynga, it looks like, you know, some pretty cool developer support.
Oh, yeah.
Studio support.
The Zynga analog was really, I was only drawing that just for what kind of content they produce.
Right,
I didn't
right.
mean to refer to their business practices or what have you.
Well, that's cool. I'm kind of curious to... following this more, because it looks like not only the Capcom lineup, but, you know, some of the other ones that are look like they're coming to the GREE platform or whatever you want to call it, so.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay, well, let's get to our last entry in our news wrap-up for this episode.
Yeah, this one was a little bit save the drama for your mama, almost, but.
Yeah. So, the owner of the Gamer trademark sent a cease and desist notice to the Gamers subreddit. If you can't tell, by the way, I'm emphasizing syllables in Gamer. We're specifically talking about the spelling of Gamer that is G-A-Y-M-E-R. It turns out that in 2007, the owner of Gamer.org, Chris Vizzini, trademarked the term gamer. Now, I remember this because I was at the time a frequent poster in a gay gaming forum. We avoided using the term gamer because we didn't want to be associated with that individual. But it turns out he got his trademark, and now he is going after websites that have the word gamer in their title.
And I just like to point out, that would be like, for me, I feel like it would be trademarking Rafflecopter or something. Technically someone could do it, but kind of a dick thing to trademark when it's an internet term, like, already existing. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, you know, it to me... it's a little bit outside of the scope of this podcast to talk about my opinions on the evolving, or not, world of trademarking and copywriting in the, you know, the current state of things. But I really feel like this is inappropriate. Like, I feel super bad for the gamers subreddit. And I hope they don't have to change their name to anything. But if they do, I hope they go with "Fuck you, Chris Vizzini," or "Chris Vizzini has herpes." Now, I'm not saying Chris Vizzini has herpes. It is very unlikely that he has herpes. I mean, not statistically speaking, but I don't know him. I certainly couldn't predict as to whether or not he has herpes, despite, you know, statistics being what they are. I do not believe this man has herpes. I just want Reddit to have a subreddit called that because he pulled such a dick move that he's a dick and I want people
honestly,
to know
then
that.
He'd probably pursue more legal action. And I mean, like.
He would. That's why I'm going out of my way to make sure everyone knows. I'm not factually trying to state that he has herpes. I'm not saying he has herpes. I'm saying he's a dick. He treats people rude, and people want to say bad things about him.
Yeah, and like you were saying, like, you know, totally removed from. I mean, because I know that the copyright, trademark issues, like all that legal kerfuffle, like, complicates things. But I mean, the thing is that for someone who's trying to, you know, promote a gay gaming community, he's really not doing much to help. And I mean, if anything, he's harming the gay gaming community at large with his own personal selfish interests.
Well, see, and that's really my concern, because, you know, he has said that the reason he has this trademark is because he's trying to grow his community, and he doesn't mean hurt or harm to anyone. He just wants to grow this community and have this be a real community. My problem is, and maybe this is just me being a little punk rock about it, your arbitrary methods of establishing your community are preventing you from being a part of the real, actual community.
Yeah. And, you know, the kind of the irony, or, like, it might also be a bit of karma. Pretty much ever since that cease and desist went up, gamer.org has been suspended. So we don't know. I'm not sure at this point what the story behind that is, but, you know, so this has been, like, pretty much, like, almost a full week of that site being down. So it's interesting. We don't know if it's, you know, a DDoS, or if it has nothing to do with the Reddit, if he forgot to pay his hosting bill, or who knows. But, you know.
Yeah.
The other interesting thing is that because it's not part of an online community, so to say, he's not pursuing legal action with GamerCon. But, you know, GamerCon was pretty upset about it, with good reason, you know, for what we're stating here. They're being, this guy is being a fucking dick by, you know, pursuing his own selfish interest and, like, harming the community at large.
And, you know, we typically try to be sort of, we try to leave our biases at the door when we record these podcasts. I tried really hard to see Chris Vizzini's stance. I'm having a really hard time connecting with the idea that somehow having ownership of a phrase and name of a community, I don't see how logically that's a constructive way to conduct the growth of a community. And I'm really at a loss here to be on his side on this. So I apologize if I come off, you know, a bit harsh on this guy. I just think that what he's doing is really damaging to an already fringe community. Certainly, we're very fortunate, and I'm going to go into a sort of a gay discussion here for maybe 15, 20 seconds. But I just have to say, when I first came out of the closet, and I was trying to date, you know, dudes, obviously, it was very unpleasant to almost come out as a gamer. It was not very popular in gay culture to play games up until fairly recently.
Yeah, definitely.
Because of groups like, you know, the subreddit Gamer, and, you know, GamerCon, and, you know, GayGamer.net was a big one. I have really personal feelings about this guy going out of his way to close down or force change upon these communities based on his personal business interests.
Yeah, I mean, because I agree, I had the same situation. I think, you know, before I met you, I remembered the first time I met Captain Spike, I made a either a Mario or a Zelda joke, and I was like, oh my god, there's another gay dude who's, like, totally a gaming nerd. So, I mean,
So I apologize. I don't mean to be so nasty about this Chris Vizzini guy. I just think that what he's doing is really inappropriate, and I wish he could open his eyes to the fact that what he's doing is counterintuitive to his goal. That's what I would really like to have happen here. So either way, stay strong, Reddit. Stay strong, gamers. Hopefully this will pass, just like every other hardship.
Yeah, and, you know, thank goodness for GamerCon, which is trying to, like, basically move the community in a positive direction, unlike this douche.
Yeah, and you know, I keep meaning to come back to the topic of GamerCon now that it's definitely a thing that's going to happen because...
Like we mentioned last time, it was funded.
It's been funded, which is great. You know, people, younger people now who are, you know, gay nerds are going to have a community to go to, and I think that's superb. I think it's great that we can have this hobby and really care about this hobby and be invested in this hobby and not have that be detrimental to the other aspects of our social communities and the way we communicate with like-minded individuals.
Precisely. Well said.
So we're still going to talk more about GamerCon in future episodes, but we're trying to keep this quick and we still have a couple points to hit in the larger scheme of things. But first, time for the topic that we have been waiting, dying to discuss.
And I'm sure you know what it is if you know us well.
So the Wii U.
Wii U, Wii U, Wii U.
Details were finally announced this week on Thursday. And I have to say, I'm stoked. Slagkick, do you want to tell the audience out there in Radioland what the packages available for the Wii U are going to be?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because at first there was the possibility of maybe being three SKUs, but there's only two, which is cool. There's a, you know, regular edition. I don't really know if it had a name except for, like, you know, the standard.
I believe they're calling it basic.
For the basic bitches. No, I'm kidding. That's a great option for some people. It's just, it's got an 8-gig solid state drive and does not come with Nintendo Land. So it's just your basic package, you know, if you...
White console. That's something to me that's very interesting, is that the basic package is only available in white.
And now the deluxe, which is what Captain Spike and I both pre-ordered, is a 32-gig solid-state drive and comes with Nintendo Land. It's a black console.
It also comes with a charger stand for your controller in case you want to charge it, you know, away from your console. It also comes with a, like, 10% digital... discount on all, like, digital purchases you make for the first, like, 2 years. So it's, to me, by far the more appealing option. And the basic set, how much did you say that was going to cost?
The basic one is $299, and the deluxe is going for $349. I mean, it was a no-brainer for me. I mean, the fact that, I mean, it comes with Nintendo Land and, you know, larger disc size, I mean, so that was a no-brainer, paying $50 more.
For me, personally, the deluxe package is a no-brainer. But I think that offering the basic for, you know, a lot of those families that had a Wii, and, you know, now they're finally ready to step up to an HD Wii, effectively.
Right. I mean, because when I've been talking with Captain Spike, I, you know, made the joke about, oh, I'm sure there's going to be some soccer moms who are like, oh, no, honey, you have a Wii already. And the kids are like, God damn it, Mom. Don't you understand that this is something different? But, yeah, definitely. And I think it's really interesting that this is, from as far as I can tell, the first time that there's really been two packages of a Nintendo console, like, very specifically, like, almost in an Xbox, you know, arcade versus Xbox Elite or whatever
Platinum
they used to,
or whatever.
Whatever they used to call those. I mean, for all the people who have been like, oh, you know, Nintendo is a toddler's console for babies who just sit around and make dung all day. Because, you know, Nintendo and dung graphics and all that. But, you know, I really think it's a shift towards, yeah, look, Nintendo means business. And we as pretty dedicated gamers went with the deluxe. But, you know, there's also that basic ones to still target the...
Yeah,
you know,
sort of the blue ocean demographic that they opened up with the Wii in the first place.
I mean, and even maybe someone who's still, like, a really passionate gamer, but it's like, you know, that's all that they need to fulfill their Wii U need, so.
And, you know, I think it's very interesting, something that I think is sort of more subtle, but I think it's very interesting that most gamers seemed upset, the ones that were not planning on buying a deluxe initially, were very upset that you could only get the basic set in white. And I can't help but wonder if there isn't a sort of subtle manipulation going on there, as Nintendo must have numbers. It must have market data as to whether black consoles or, you know, black models don't sell better. We saw, you know, the 360 launched as a white console, and I believe the most recent Slim models have had black models instead.
Yeah, I believe so. I was going to say, I mean, PS3's always been a nice polished black, shiny realness.
Yeah, most of the Sony platforms have been piano black.
You know,
for
that
years
even makes
now.
Me think, was it the PSP that had that really.
The super racist
that
ad.
That super racist ad about white is coming or something.
Yeah, we'll post a link to that on the
Yeah, it was just bad page. Marketing.
We'll put that up on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Just in case you haven't seen it, because it's really offensive. I mean, it's kind of a cool concept because the woman they have representing white is just this awesome punk rock woman with super rad hair. But there's some really unfortunate racist undertones that are just, like, really
yeah,
Sony.
Yeah, way to go, Sony. So, but yeah, that's, you know, that's very interesting about, like, you know, kind of, like, business marketing psychology and, you know, but, I mean, for me it was, like, you know, with the deluxe package, you know, I don't really have a preference for black over white when it comes to consoles, so, you know.
Yeah, I... Ultimately, the color of my console makes no difference. For me, I'm only going deluxe on Wii U because
yeah,
I want
so you
Nintendo
know,
Land.
Your console can be black, white, or beige, Chola, or Orient made.
Yeah, this is a gaming podcast. Nobody's going to get a Lady Gaga reference. So, one thing that I thought was really interesting about the Wii U, and we're gonna move on now, is that Nintendo has announced that any form of USB memory will work for sort of extending your space available for, you know, downloads, memory cards.
That's great.
Yeah, you know, the specific reference given by Reggie, whose last name I can't pronounce.
Whose body Fiamme, is ready.
Fiamme, maybe? He had said that, you know, internally, I guess they were sticking in 3 terabyte USB hard drives to use on their Wiis and testing or whatever, and that it was perfectly legit. And to me, man, that is awesome. I am going to go over to Fry's Electronics and pick up, like, a $70 1 terabyte USB hard drive, and then I'll just put all of my Wii U stuff on that.
Right?
And I saw people complaining online about data transfer speeds over USB 2, but I'm pretty sure that USB 2 protocol is still faster data movement than what you get off of an optical drive on a Blu-ray player. So I think that's going to work out awesomely.
Yeah, and I, you know, it's just interesting because I just feel like people are expecting Nintendo to half-ass it or, like, have some type of way to Care Bear-asize it. I'm going to trademark that and then sue anyone who tries to Care Bear-asize. But, you know, like, but no, Nintendo knows what they are doing. Obviously, they knew what they were doing with the Wii. They know what they're doing with the Wii U. So, I mean,
I still think history has proven Nintendo right on the Wii situation. I think that maybe it would have been better if the Wii U had launched at this time last year. Oh, we forgot the most important information. The Wii U is going to be coming out November 18th of this year.
In the U.S.
In the U.S., no less. We are, like, exactly, by the time you hear this, it will be, like, exactly 2 months away from the release of the Wii U.
I am so excited. But the interesting thing is that, and you know, I don't remember the European date off the top of my head, unfortunately, but they get it at the end of November, I believe.
At the end of November. I want to say the 30th, but I'm that's off the top of my head. I could be
and
wrong.
Japan does not get it the same time as
until
us, which
December
is
8th.
December 8th.
This is not unprecedented. There have been both software and hardware releases where there's been a week or two delay between regional releases, including Japan going after the U.S. What I find most fascinating is that in Japan, it's going to launch with a bundle alongside Monster Hunter Ultimate for Wii U, which I believe is being called Monster Hunter Ultimate HD version.
Very smart, Nintendo.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing I was thinking of is that Europe and Japan, as far as I know, I mean, I'm not an expert on foreign cultures, but I don't think that they have any real equivalent to, like, the Black Friday marketing bonanza.
Well, Japan does in Golden Week, but that is not at this time of year even. So, certainly for this season, I think you're right.
So, I mean, I think it's very, very intentional that Wii U's coming here before Black Friday, you know.
Oh, I think it would be devastating to their marketing plan for the remainder of the year not to hit Black Friday.
Right, I mean, because, you know, as far as I know, pre-orders at GameStop and Best Buy are all out at this point.
My understanding is that pre-orders on the Deluxe are basically out everywhere at this point. Last I heard, which was admittedly yesterday morning, most GameStops still had a couple of basics left, but at this point I would almost assume not even that.
And that's interesting, because you see, you know, presumably most of the people jumping on those Deluxe packages are, you know, kind of the more, and you know, and I don't really like using the term hardcore gamer, because I think anyone who has a passion for gaming, regardless of what their, you know, preference may be, or their gaming styles, it should not be, you know, excluded. But, you know, it's interesting that the ones that are, you know, maybe a little more on the less casual side, you know, less family-oriented side, people like us are really jumping on that, so.
I think you're right, and even though this is a harsh segue, let's talk games.
Oh, yeah!
So, really noteworthy, as, you know, you probably got from my inferences previously in this episode, Capcom has announced for Wii U Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate, which is going to be a slightly further enhanced version of Monster Hunter 3 that's coming out on the Wii U on launch day in Japan on December 8th. I almost believe that that the Wii U is being held up in Japan for this to come out the same day. I think that it's going to be a huge advantage in Japan to launch with a Monster Hunter game. Especially one that's as super pretty as Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate HD-ver. But also interesting is that Capcom has confirmed and committed to releasing both Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate HD-ver in the US and Europe, as well as a new version of Monster Hunter 3 for 3DS, which is also Monster Hunter Ultimate, that is going to support game save swapping with your Wii U version.
Nice.
So that you can have your hunter and be gearing him and hunting monsters on the subway, and then get home and sync your character and continue with the same character in HD on your Wii U.
That's great, because that seems like it was something that they had wanted to do with Wii and DS that just never quite really panned out.
And this sort of connectivity is something we've discussed on this show, you know. Sony supposedly is aiming to do this with the Vita. EA had their whole initiative of doing this kind of stuff with games starting with Mass Effect 3. We discussed that months and months ago. I find this very compelling. As someone who does have a long subway commute, it is very nice for me to be able to play games and then go home and play on the big TV with the same data and characters that I'm building up during my commute on my portable console.
And, you know, even the possibilities for, say, you know, the next true generation of Pokemon after Black 2, White 2, like, the, you know, the first proper 3DS release, the potentials that could have with a Wii U Pokemon game, I mean, who knows, you know? So,
That would be
cool
awful.
Stuff. Ugh, excuse you.
You know, obviously the big game announcement, though, was that Nintendo has graciously saved Bayonetta 2. There have been a lot of rumors over the last 6 months about Sega's inability to continue funding a lot of these more niche IPs. Bayonetta 2 was all but dead insofar as anyone knew. And even Anarchy Reigns, in which Bayonetta is going to appear, it's been out in Japan for quite some time now. Theoretically, we're getting it in January or February of next year. But even that, you know, Sega took it off the release calendar like 3 weeks before it came out. And that was very uncertain. And now, because of Nintendo, we're going to have Bayonetta 2 in our lives. Published and by Nintendo and exclusive to the Wii U platform. For me, this is like a 100% confirmation that even if Nintendo isn't right for everyone, they are aligned to what I want out of this industry right now.
Yeah, I'm just over the moon about this Bayonetta 2 news because, you know, as far as I was concerned, I was like, oh, I really want to see Bayonetta 2. We've talked about it many times on air, but I never even figured that it was ever going to be a thing. I was just like, you know, with all of Sega's troubles, with a capital T, you know, I figured, okay, well, you know, I would love to see it, but, you know, I might as well just accept the fact that we're going to live in a world with no more Bayonetta games and be happy for Anarchy Reigns.
Yeah, and we...
But we're going to live in a world with another Bayonetta game that, you know, fingers crossed, turns into an entire franchise.
Well, yeah, and Platinum said that they would love to see it grow into a franchise. So, you know, hopefully the player base is there, and hopefully this game really sees the support that it deserves.
And, you know, I know we're on a tight schedule, but I think I really need to quickly rant about something.
Okay, then you need to do it, like, right now. You got 100 seconds. Go.
Call 911 now!
So, I saw a lot of people online, people I know, and just, you know, people around the internet, who were upset about this. And I understand, but I'm sorry, you know, that you just can't appreciate the fact that Nintendo is making this happen. I mean, would these people really prefer that Bayonetta 2 never came out instead of being a Wii U exclusive? I mean, it's just, I don't know. We know that a lot of people out there aren't on the Nintendo train. I try my best to respect that, but, you know, really, to be blunt, get your head out of your ass and educate yourself about what the Wii U's going to be doing. And, you know, don't write it off for being a Nintendo Care Bear console, because, frankly, I'm just getting tired of people shitting all over Nintendo with their crappy dung. And, yeah, you know, bottom line, they made Bayonetta 2 happen. Shut the hell up.
Excellent. I could not have... Okay, well, no, I probably could have said it better.
No, myself. You probably would have said it better, but...
But I agree with you. That's the important part. I agree with you. It deeply upsets me that people are so biased against Nintendo that they can't see what a boon it is that Nintendo intervened here. I have nothing more, nothing less to say on the topic.
And, I mean, yes, we're biased. We love Platinum games.
So... My love for Nintendo is not nearly so deep as my love for Platinum games. I will defend every single one of Platinum's games from here to the damn moon. I think Mad World was superb. Infinite Space was freaking amazing. And I just... I can't even...
And, you know, we get it if you're one of those gamers who is like, nah, bro, I just want to play Call of Duty and Gears of War. It's like, you know, that's cool. We're glad that you're, you know,
yeah,
enjoying
I'm glad you're
the
well
world
catered.
Of video gaming. But
yeah, I'm glad that those people are catered to, but I don't want only them to be catered to. I want everyone to be catered to.
Precisely.
On a Platinum Games note, Project P100 has been renamed the Wonderful 101.
Or as I've been calling it, 1101.
You'll have to write that out on the website so people can get it.
Yeah, obviously. WON101.
Of course, you know, so we're going to have Mario, New Super Mario Bros. Wii U, or whatever. Scribblenauts, Zombie U, basically all of the games that we were talking about, that we've been talking about for months. The newly announced games, Monster Hunter, Bayo, let's see, Activision announced Call of Duty Black Ops 2 for Wii U, and it looked gorgeous. At this, the event, the Wii U event, they showed gameplay footage, and it looked really good, locked in at 60 frames a second. It looked like the polygon, or all the character models had just really great texture work and great modeling. I was really impressed. I may actually pick up a Call of Duty game.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm planning on, but, you know, hey, if that challenges some people to be like, hey, maybe I should pick up this Nintendo game because of WAPS, then, you know, that's great, because, you know, people have just not taken Nintendo consoles seriously, like, ever. Well, I mean, at least for maybe the past 15 years, at least, so,
yeah,
you know.
And, you know, we're gonna have to cut this off now, but you're in a sentence, what is your thoughts on the Wii U news of this week?
I am super excited, and I was anxious because I was worried I wasn't gonna get a pre-order, but now I have one, and I can't wait. That was one sentence, so don't even try to give me shit.
Well, you know, you actually, one sentence in there.
That was one sentence, thank you very much.
One sentence in there summed up my feelings perfectly. I was so anxious about getting a pre-order after the details were finally announced that I felt true anxiety over not until I had locked my system down. So I am excited beyond words. I was literally jumping with glee after Bayonetta 2 was announced.
Exactly, and I mean, the thing is that my Wii experience, wasn't able to get a pre-order, and, you know, I was just like, oh my god, so I had to camp out for one, which was cool, but, I mean, it was so smooth this time that I'm just like, ah.
And, you know, I want to take a second to note, I know we talk about Nintendo a lot, and especially lately, in part, that's just because, you know, we're Nintendo fans, and, you know, Nintendo's been really newsworthy of late. But as we gear up to the next box and or PS4, you know, I really expect those trains to start getting going in the next 3 to 4 months. They're going to get just as much coverage as Nintendo is getting right now, frankly.
Maybe.
Well, okay, I guess the only reasonable circumstance in which that wouldn't happen is if only Call of Duty is announced for the 360 or, I'm sorry, the 720 next box, or the PS4. Otherwise, no, we're going to talk about it. We're going to get excited. We're going to see cool games get announced, and we're going to rant and giggle like girls. And it's going to be amazing. You know, and that's what we're doing for Nintendo right now, because Nintendo is the one that is in the news right now. So stick with us, even if you hate Nintendo, because, you know, whatever platform you are beholden to is going to get its time to shine. For me, I'm just going to talk about the games that I think are awesome, and I'm going to be super excited, and hopefully you're going to get excited from that, too.
So we're talking about games that are coming soon, but we should talk about... What's
going on? Yeah, actually, that's
my
totally true.
My singing voice is beautiful, isn't it?
Oh, that was you! Oh, I'm so happy. I'm so proud to know you. Like, I feel like the way I felt when I met J-Lo.
You met J-Lo?
No, she was just the first celebrity that came to mind, so I threw her name out.
Anyways, Captain Spike, what have you been playing?
So, I was going to talk about Guild Wars 2, and I was going to talk about my recent experiences in experimenting with PlayStation 2 emulation. Except then, on the 14th Friday, FTL finally came out. FTL was one of the first big Kickstarter games. And it is essentially a roguelike in space.
Which basically sounds right up your alley.
It is. It is right up my alley. I downloaded it Friday. One of our listeners had been tweeting us about it previously, and I got really hyped about it, the game. So I downloaded it, and the next thing I knew, I had lost like 5 hours of my life. Like, just, I was playing this game with basically no interruption, no talking to other people, just playing this game for like 5 hours. I, in that time, must have died 9 times, and had to start over from the beginning because it is punishing. It is a punishingly difficult game. But that's part of the charm, is that, you know, it's there's a bit of a roll of the dice, like, how lucky am I with world layouts right now? But it also comes down to how you strategize and how you sort of utilize your resources and manage them. It's just, it's a very cool game. It's on sale right now for like $8.99 on Steam. I wholeheartedly recommend anyone who is even vaguely interested in science fiction-y games or roguelikes, check it out. I do not believe you would be sad. And what about you, Slag? What are you working on?
Well, you may remember last time I was almost at the halfway point of Final Fantasy VI. Well, I finally got through that floating continent, and wow.
Spoiler alert!
So yeah, we're going to...
Just go at it. Just have at it.
So, and you know, I'm still gathering my party back up, but, you know, I can't remember the last time I played a game that I was just like, oh my god. Like, I was worried about what happened to my party members because, you know, I went into this blind. I didn't read any spoilers. And then, you know, Kefka fucks shit up. Pardon my French. And, you know, and then, oh, hey, Celis wakes up on an island. And who knows what happened. So, I'm working on, you know, gathering my troops back up. I ran into Sabin, who I was super happy to see, and I found Cyan, and I love their little stories, because, you know, it's like a year since the cataclysmic events, right?
Yep.
So, you know, like, when Celis wakes up after a year's sleep, you know, kind of get to go and see what these other characters have been doing. You kind of may not know the fates of some of them, so I'm really, like, just super invested in it. I mean, I already was, but, I mean, like I said, I cannot believe for a game, you know, on the Super NES, Super Famicom, that it's just so rich, and, you know, even with the translation, which is, you know, as you said, not on the... SNES/PlayStation version. It's not the ideal translation, but, I mean, still, just so rich. So, you know, I'm picking away at that, and hopefully by our next episode I'll be able to talk about it in full. So,
excellent. I look forward to that. That's one of my favorite games of all time. And excellent. We wrapped that up. That was just a minute or two. So brilliant. And it is now time for everyone's favorite, yours and mine. It's time for...
Party of the Week!
Whoa, what was that?
Actually, we're not going to do that. I'd argue that games journalism this week has actually been remarkably decent.
Even Kotaku.
Honestly, especially Kotaku. They handled the Wii U press events with grace and aplomb.
That was exactly the words I was going to use, too.
It was really well done. I was very impressed, and frankly, I don't want to beat up on them when they're actually doing good stuff. Like, you guys did awesome. I went to your site so many times this week. Well done. If you guys could be like that all the time, I'd actually like you a lot. So maybe aim for that. I want to use this opportunity to tell you about a scandal that's brewing, about a game of the sort that maybe we usually wouldn't be talking about. I'm speaking about NBA Ballers. And as usual, Penny Arcade Reports has the tip. Slag, can you take this one?
Yes, we will link the article for you on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And it's called Lying to Get Press, the Seemingly Bought or Faked Twitter Followers of NBA Baller Beats. And there's like a picture of a guy with pretty nice arms stabbing a basketball.
You slut. That's actually one of the guys that... the Penny Arcade Reports guy is talking about knowing, so that's one of their buddies.
Hot. Anyway, this controversy is that...
Okay, I just loaded up the image, and actually, you're right, he looks pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if he has a fresh face or not, but he's got nice arms.
Moving on.
Anyway, so, you know,
they put out a press release talking about how the buzz for the game is growing. It already has 4 million video views and nearly 70,000 Twitter followers. And that set off some alarm bells. And Ben Kuchera, I hope I'm not butchering his name, because he's doing some great things on the Penny Arcade Report. He gave some numbers. Assassin's Creed Twitter account has about 130,000 followers. Call of Duty, their Twitter account has 546. So, you know, this very kind of, you know, NBA baller beats, not even usually the thing we would talk about on here. And, you know, sports games, I would say, you know, are popular, but, you know, maybe not as much so as the Call of Duties and Halos of the world. But anyways, you know, for a game from Majesco, of all people, to have that huge of a following on Twitter set up some alarm bells. So, basically, and, you know, we're not going to read the whole article to you, but Ben Kuchera checked out this site called Status People, and it kind of tells you roughly what the amount of fake or inactive accounts on a Twitter feed are. And for NBA Baller Beats Twitter, 15% were fake, 80% inactive, and only 5% were, like, legitimate Twitter accounts. And so, you know, that could be, like, you know, whatever. But the thing is, that was curious, that he looked at some data on Twitter counter, and on the date of August 19th, there were exactly 214,429. But then after that, every day gained exactly 21,321 followers.
Yeah,
exactly,
that is
every day. Never more, never less.
That's shady.
So, I mean, the thing about it is, you know, and I agree with this, he says when you believe in your game, you don't need to bullshit. So, you know, basically, Majesco, and I don't know if there's been any further clarification since then, but basically they've been like, oh, you know, we're really pleased with the reception for NBA Baller Beats, and, you know, they're like, you know, any Twitter account's going to be followed by bots. I mean, my Twitter, at Slagkick, is followed by a couple bots, but, you know.
Yeah, mine, at SpikePoint. Also, I have a few bots following me. I don't even know how they got there.
And I think probably at GameBuoy Podcast has some bots. But anyways, you know, there's this whole kerfluffle about, you know, there's no way to prove whether they were, you know, purchased Twitter accounts or what's going on. But it just looks awfully shady. And
I'd recommend that you load up this article if you're interested. It's really kind of interesting to think, you know, about publishers basically paying companies, presumably, to have bots follow their game on Twitter. Like, that's bizarre to me.
And
it's very interesting.
The other thing is that, like, even the Penny Arcade guys themselves had previously...
Well, not previously. It was the same day.
Oh,
you know,
my bad. Yeah,
they posted that they actually played the game because, I guess, I don't know if they got a press copy or what, but they ended up really liking it. Like, they actually had very good things to say about NBA Ballers.
Yeah, and I mean, like, for those of you who don't know, about you, if you're reading the article at this point, you probably have an idea. It's basically a Kinect game where you are doing, like, a rhythm game thing, bouncing an actual basketball, which I know could break your TV or piss off the neighbors downstairs, but has a super legit track list, Missy Elliott's Get Your Freak On,
Janelle Monáe's Tightrope,
and just all types of things, Chromeo, Interpol, so, like, really cool, diverse, eclectic set list, and, you know, an interesting game, but, you know, is it going to be harmed by it? Is any publicity good publicity? Are people going to be less inclined to buy it now that they think people are making fake accounts? So, I mean, I don't know.
Anyway,
we'll have to see how it ends up.
We'll have to see how this goes, and I may actually, if I can find a copy on sale somewhere, I may pick it up just so that I can see, because the way the Penny Arcade guys describe this game, it actually sounds like something I'd enjoy playing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it seems like kind of
oddly a cool game, and I don't usually have any interest in sports games, but, you know, really, Majesco? If this is true, really, Majesco?
You know, to be fair, I can't help but think this is probably a response to the somewhat absurd sales targets that are being set these days. And, you know, maybe the marketers feel like they need to cheat their way to meeting a certain requirement for attention.
Yeah, maybe they just didn't expect that super clever and smart people like Ben Kuchera were kind of on top of this sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, kind of unfortunate if that's true, but, you know, like you said, the bigger question is, why do we have such ridiculous sales targets?
Well, you know, that's what we exist for. That's what Game Buoy is about. Questioning why.
Speaking of ridiculous, before we let this podcast get to a ridiculous length.
Oh, good, because I was just going to segue too. Mine was a little better, but we'll stick with yours.
Do you care to do your segue? Would you like to ride a segue?
It's fine. I want to get my shout-outs in. I really want to talk about one of my new favorite podcasts out there. It's called Dorked, and it's a delightful little audio parfait at only about 10 minutes an episode, talking about sort of the same sort of stuff we discuss here, except in a lot more controlled and informative manner. We'll have a link on our website, but that's Dorked, and again, I can't really recommend it enough. It's like us in bite-sized pieces and a little less outrageous. I think there's probably definitely a market for that. Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer gets a voice, and from whom we take so many of our cues. The best little horde house in Azeroth. You know, the most lovable pack of gossipy little bitches I could imagine talking about.
And, you know, I am totally having a mind fart here. I don't remember, but I actually was a guest on their show a couple weeks back, and I don't recall if I mentioned that, but I would like to shout out to that. Yeah, they're definitely cool.
And that, you know, it's funny, that's an interesting point. Why don't you take the last
Yeah, shots? We love our boys over at the Nerdgasm Network. You know, if you think that we're, rated R, then, you know, they're something else. But they're just a fun group of guys. I actually had the opportunity to be a guest on their 50th episode. And, you know, and they just, those guys can just keep going and going. And like we said, you know, some of our favorite podcasts can run super long, but, you know, it's such a fun time. I had a blast, so I'd like to thank them for having me on, and definitely check them out at the Nerdgasm Network. And we also like to say holla to Girls Gone Wow. It's our other favorite World of Warcraft podcast with Syl and friends, and Video Game Outsiders with the lovely Michelle Madison. And, you know, just all these peeps really out there doing great things. And I'm the type of person who loves to listen to a bunch of different podcasts, so hopefully you are too.
Yeah. You know, and I have another shout-out to my roommate. He doesn't have a podcast up yet. We are currently recording on his podcasting equipment. Hopefully you've noticed that our audio quality is a little better. And I as soon as he has his podcast together on tabletop gaming, which I think should be by our next episode, definitely you guys should look forward to that, and if you have any interest in tabletop gaming, definitely listen to that, because I'm pretty sure he's going to put something good together.
And he is an awesome DM, so I'm sure it's going to be a blast to listen to.
As always, we live and die for your feedback. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us a positive review, or a negative one, but fuck you. And
tweet us.
Give us some likes on Facebook. That's also very useful for us. And tweet us.
And email us. Email us. Oh, my God. We are like 14-year-old girls. You can email us like hella, and we will totally be into it.
Oh, totes. Our Twitter, however, is at GameBuoyPodcast.
At GameBuoyPodcast.
You can email us at
slagkick@gamebuoy.org.
slagkick@gamebuoy.org.
And Captain Spikes is cpt.spike@gamebuoy.org.
cpt.spike@gamebuoy.org.
Honestly, you could probably type in gibberish@gamebuoy.org, and my catch-all would send it all to my address. So just email us. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to interact.
We're out. We love you. Stay gaming. Stay thinking. Until next time, see you, Space Cowboy.